Looking at our world from a theological perspective. This is the Theology Central Podcast, making theology central.
Good evening, everyone. It is Saturday, April the 20th, 2024. It is currently 7:55 p.m. Central Time, and I am coming to you live from the Theology Central studio located right here in Abilene, Texas. Now, because it's, and I really kind of paused there, it is Saturday, because it is Saturday, that typically tells you what I'm doing, right? I typically will tell you that I'm here in the studio, but I'm not really so focused on broadcasting. I'm usually focused on what I'm going to be doing tomorrow at Victory Baptist Church, what I'm going to be doing during the Sunday school hour, Sunday morning worship service, and Sunday evening, trying to figure it out. What am I going to teach? What will I preach? How things are going to go? Who's going to be there? Who's not going to be there? All those kinds of things. And even if I'm not directly thinking about what I'm going to do, a lot of times Saturdays, I do a lot of thinking just about church in general, people going to church, sermons, what will they hear? What will they get from it? Will people even remember it? How much money it costs to keep churches up? Just a lot. I just do a lot of thinking and questioning about that type of thing. So a lot of times I will turn on the microphone and kind of talk about that, because the one thing I try to do in this podcast is whatever I'm thinking about is kind of what I end up talking about. But I found myself kind of sitting here going, okay, well, all right, well, you know, how am I going to work tomorrow? I'm still kind of just struggling with what to do. Now, the one thing that I know I'm going to be discussing is, as many of you know, because we've talked about it here on this podcast, April the 18th was the day that they restarted the Charles Stanley, you know, Institute. I think that's the anniversary of his death. I think he died a year ago on April the 18th. I believe it was April the 18th. So he passed away over about a year ago. And one of the last things he signed off for was for the Charles Stanley Institute, in a sense, to kind of start again as someone who graduated and you got a certificate from the, you know, finished the course, finished the entire institute the first time around. I obviously am very interested in how they're going to do it this time. So I, you know, I had already pre-registered, immediately got started on the first class on discipleship. And the very first sermon you had to listen to was kind of like, "What Are You Living For?" I think is the name of the sermon by Charles Stanley. And I've kind of gone through the study guide. I've been going through the additional videos they have. I've taken a quiz. I've just been kind of doing all the things. But I really was challenged by that first sermon. So tomorrow, I'm going to be taking that first sermon, utilizing it pretty straight. I'm going to kind of just use it straightforward and just kind of say, hey, this is where it came from. But I'm going to, he stops and his look at some verses in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And I'm going to continue on and try to put the thought together maybe in somewhat of a different way before I'm finished. The first part will be very similar, but the second part hopefully will be additional. Hopefully I can get it all done in an hour. But no matter how it goes tomorrow, I've just been really thinking about it, and just, it's just one of those times you hear something and it just hits you and it just sticks with you. And in the sermon, he puts forth this concept that there's really two ways, you know, there's kind of two types of life, right? There's the life that is God-centered, and there is the life that is self-centered. And that a self-centered life, everything revolves around you, and you see everything through the filter of I. How will this impact me? How will this affect me? And so I've been really just trying to process, okay, as Christians, we know we should not be living the self-centered life, but how much of our lives are really self-centered? And what should a Christ-centered life look like? Not just from the person standing in the pulpit, but from the people in the pew. And we kind of talked a little bit about this on the last live broadcast. So I've been sitting here just thinking about that. You know, how am I going to teach this? What is my ultimate, you know, goal here? What do I really want to achieve? Just really thinking about it. And then I was like, okay, let me set that aside for a minute. And I just kind of was sitting here. And then I got a notification on my iPad. I got a notification from the Apple Podcast app. And I can't remember. It was something about bitter bitterness and gravel. And I'm like, you know, what is this? And so I opened the notification and it took me to the latest episode of Our Daily Bread podcast. Our Daily Bread is a little devotional podcast. They're about 5 to 6 minutes long. You may have seen the actual physical Our Daily Bread devotional. Very, very popular. It's never very in-depth or very theological. It's very devotional and very surface, but you know, it always can give you something to think about. So I clicked on it and I hit play, and it took me to Proverbs chapter 20. I mean, the devotional started talking, and they talked about how these people, you know, in Germany stole this truck full of chocolate that was worth like, I don't know, the chocolate was worth like $80,000, and how by stealing that, you know, it could turn into something bad. So they read this verse, Proverbs chapter 20, starting in verse 17. This is the verse they read. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 17. Bread of deceit is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth shall be filled with gravel. And I'm like, wow. So you could take something. It could be sweet. It could be amazing. But if you do so in a deceitful way or in a wrong way, it could end up, well, as it says here, your mouth shall be filled with gravel. It could end in a really negative way. And I'm like, wow, okay, well, that could be applicable in my life and probably in all of our lives in some way, okay, because we all engage in sin in some way. So we could be obtaining or gaining or doing something sinful, and it could be wonderful, but it could end as gravel. I'm like, okay, that's pretty convicting. All right, do I do something with that? I'm like, okay, I don't know. Maybe I should. And I was just kind of trying to process what I should do. So I kind of opened my Bible to Proverbs 20, just set it down, was just kind of processing it, thinking. So I'm thinking about the Christ-centered life, the self-centered life, okay, about bread that you obtain by deceit and how it could end up like gravel. Okay, all right, I was thinking about that. Just trying to process, this is how my mind was working. And then I reached over and I grabbed my iPad and I'm like, okay, well, let me just see what's going on in the world. Let me just see, you know, what's happening. Just, again, you know, you probably have done that before when you've been working on something and you're just kind of giving yourself kind of maybe a mental break from that. You just sometimes just start going from thing to thing to thing to thing. So then I opened this and I saw on the Christian Post, Mark Driscoll, and I'm like, oh, for crying out loud. Is this story ever going to end? No, not another story about Mark Driscoll and John Lindell and James River Church and a guy swallowing a sword with no shirt and Stronger Man's Conference. No, not this again, not this again. So I saw the headline, Mark Driscoll, Alex Magala, and the Jezebel Spirit Uproar. The Big Lesson Learned. And I'm like, ooh. So someone has decided what is the big lesson that we've learned in this entire situation. And the whole situation has been crazy because I don't know if you've watched it or if you've paid attention to it. But in fact, make sure I've got all the names here. Yeah, Pastor John Lindell. All right, so James River Church, John Lindell, they host this conference called Stronger Men's Conference. They have this guy perform. Driscoll obviously witnesses, sees the performance. When he gets a chance to speak, he calls it out. The uproar ensues. John Lindell and Mark Driscoll come back on stage. Everything seems to be somewhat okay. Then Mark Driscoll goes home, and then chaos ensues. And it gets so bad that John Lindell, for all practical purposes, it was almost like a church discipline. He brought the matter before the church, revealed these private texts, and the whole thing was just crazy, and it just never seems to stop. So here's another story about it. But here's like, someone's like, here's the big lesson learned. Now, what's been crazy for me, the big lesson I've seen so far is, wait a minute. If everyone has heard all of this information, witnessed everything that has occurred, you would think that within Christianity, we would all come to somewhat of a similar conclusion, right? You would think logically, right? We all have the Bible. Remember, we're all supposedly filled with the Holy Spirit. And many Christians believe the Holy Spirit's guiding us and teaching us and revealing things to us and speaking to us, all the things many Christians claim. But guess what? this entire situation with Mark Driscoll, John Lindell, James River Church, Alex Magala, sword eating, acrobat on a pole with no shirt, all Christian Men's Conference, all of these things. You think that we could take all of this, process it biblically, logically, carefully, and come to similar conclusions. But I've been reading comments and all of the articles about it. It is insane. Like, you've got about 50, maybe even some, and some of the websites I've seen, it maybe be 60 or 70% are like, Mark Driscoll's right. Even after all of this other information has come out, he's right. John Lindell and James River Church is wrong. What they did was apostate. What they did was demonic. They should be rebuked. Their church is apostate. And you're like, what just happened here? It's like, well, what? All that stuff Mark Driscoll did when he got home? But it's just crazy. And then other people are trying to defend everything, but then their defenses at times seem weird. It's like, I'm like, this is crazy. We can't even agree as Christians on how to critique, analyze, and judge something from a biblical perspective. That is the most, that like, sometimes it just makes me want to just say, what's the point? What's the point? We have the Word of God. So, We should be able to figure something out. We should be able to look at a situation and look at it carefully and make a biblical, have a biblical opinion about it. But Christians can't even agree. And it's just like, sometimes you're just like, I don't get it. So I wanted to know what their big lesson was. So I'm going to read this. You're going to immediately see where this author is going to go, right? Now, this was published today. This article was published today, which makes it fascinating, meaning this author would have access to the entire video put out by James River Church, where John Lindell stands there on the pulpit and goes through everything Mark Driscoll has done and every step that's been taken to try to get him to repent and stop. And you would think that anyone seeing everything would be like, whoa, wait a minute. I may think Mark Driscoll was right in the original rebuke, but this has gone crazy. So you think people would have a very layered and nuanced response at taking in everything. And remember how I told everyone to break it down? We should look at the conference and just talk about the whole conference industrial complex and everything that happens in these conferences and whether we think they're right or wrong. We could look at the performance itself. Is it right or wrong? And Alex Magala and John Lindell gave some context and historical background. And okay, and we found out some, okay, does that change our opinion of the performance? Then we could look at what Mark Driscoll did. Was it right? Was it wrong? He spoke to John Lindell, 25, 30 minutes. And at no point did Driscoll ever tell John Lindell that he was upset about the performance or that he was going to say anything. And so John Lindell was blindsided by what Driscoll did, right or wrong. John Lindell interrupts Mark Driscoll, stops his preaching, says, you're finished, you're done, comes up on the stage and immediately basically accuses Driscoll of violating Matthew 18. Then they come back on stage and everything seems to be made right. You can break each one of those and say, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? And what do you think about this? I don't know if it's easy to paint the whole thing with one brush, with one color. It's nuanced. It's layered. All right. So I tried to do that, but it didn't matter. Some people still got upset with me. So you would think Christians should be able to come to some kind of conclusion that would be unified. But no, there's just no unity on this. So when I start reading this article, listen carefully. Listen carefully to the tone and the side they take. But what we're really listening for, what is the big lesson we should all take away from this? Here's what they say, right? I'm going to read this. Are you ready? Here we go. This is found at thechristianpost.com, published today. The article begins, let me begin by saying that I know that it's extremely hard to be a pastor in these times. Tossing the armchair quarterbacks on social media and the pressure only intensifies. But at the same time, we are at a very critical turning point for Christian leaders. Now, it is very hard to be a pastor, and everyone is a Monday morning quarterback. Everyone has an opinion. They have an opinion on what you preach. They have an opinion on how you preach it. They have an opinion on your voice, whether you speak too fast, too loud, too dramatic, not dramatic enough, too boring, too monotone, they have an opinion about what you wear. They have an opinion about your hair. They have an opinion about if you walk around too much or if you stand too still. They have an opinion about how you interpret a passage or don't interpret a passage. They have an opinion about what you preach. It's insane. Everyone has an opinion. Now, that's always been the case. You add to it if you post your sermons online or if you do a podcast. Now you have even more people with opinions. So he said, now this author believes we're at a critical turning point for Christian leaders. I think we're at a critical turning point for the church. That's my view. I think the church is going through a radical transformation, and the church is not going to even look, you're not even going to recognize the church of the past, I would say 5 to 10 years from now. That's my view, but I could be wrong. They continue, all right? They asked this question, what happened at the conference? CBN News posted this explanation. Hours after rebuking what he dubbed the Jezebel spirit at a men's event over the weekend, Pastor Mark Driscoll was invited back to the platform at the Stronger Men's Conference in Springfield, Missouri. In a deviation from his planned sermon, Driscoll called out what he saw as the spiritually problematic kickoff to the two-day convention, which was hosted by James River Church, a megachurch led by Pastor John Lindell. Right. Driscoll took issue with the opening ceremony at the Great Southern Bank Arena, where stuntman Alex Magala performed. Okay. Then they have this sashaying with a sword. Then they go on to describe it this way. The stuntman was previously on America's Got Talent. And for whatever reason or motive, the conference organizers thought it was appropriate to have a bare-chested man on a pole dressed in all leather outfit swallowing a sword. Now, when you describe it that way, it does feel a little bit ridiculous. It does. And again, the main thing is it's a Christian men's conference. Now, I've already heard from people, but, you know, people's attention spans are short in 2024, so you got to do this to grab their attention. And, hey, this many people were saved. Okay, it's the same kind of tired arguments I've heard my whole life. Well, you know, the reason the youth group has to have lock-ins in this is because their attention span is short. I heard that in the 80s. I've been hearing it my whole life. No. How about we just like to entertain the flesh? How about the church can't seem to just do church stuff? We've got to do all the stuff that the world does because that's what the people really want. But okay, I digress. And so this author goes on to say, confused, so was I. Driscoll rebuked the conference because they invited the Jezebel spirit in. At that point, Pastor Lindell told him he was out of line and removed him from the platform. Lindell then began to reference Matthew 18, stating that Driscoll should have addressed the concerns privately, not on the main platform. Now, the author goes on to say, in my opinion, a gross public display demands a public rebuke. Now, you could argue that it demands a public. Remember, this goes back to all the different layers to this, right? So why did they have this performance? Was it right? Was it wrong? We could have that discussion. Now, the argument about what Driscoll did, my thing is it may have called for a public rebuke. I don't know if it called for a public rebuke like 24 hours later, and you've even spoken to the man hosting it for like 20, 25, 30 minutes, and you didn't even mention it. I mean, that's the problem. You can go to the pastor and go, hey, man, I think what you just did was completely messed up, and I'm going to address it when I preach. I'm preaching on Elijah, and so I'm going to refer to this as a Jezebel spirit. If you've got a problem, tell me now. Now, you could argue that by doing that, he would not be allowed to speak, so the rebuke would never be heard. Now, if that's the case, Driscoll should have just stood by it when he brought back out. Like, look, I didn't talk to you about it because you wouldn't have let me give him the rebuke. But then Driscoll said it wasn't a rebuke. So see, it goes all over the place. But there's lots of different layers to this. And that's what all Christians should be trying to figure this out. So he goes on to say, after the fiasco, when Pastor Lindell and Driscoll were on the platform talking it through, Lindell made a jaw-dropping statement. Now, I don't know if I have video of this statement. And once again, here's one of the major problems with this entire controversy is James River Church would have video of everything and they could have put it all together And the only thing they edited is, here's the performance in its entirety. Here's Driscoll's comments in their entirety. Here's John Lindell interrupting. Here's his comments in their entirety. Hear them coming back on stage. Here's that conversation in its entirety. Here is John Lindell then speaking to James River Church, basically church disciplining Mark Driscoll. Here's that in its entirety. They could put that all together, place it on their website, and then people would not be piecing together. Because the way this has happened, people just keep looking for additional information. If it was just all released instantaneously, then you could have at least sped up the controversial cycle. That's the thing that's driven me crazy. But according to this, after the fiasco, when Pastor Lindell and Driscoll were on the platform talking it through, Lindell made a jaw-dropping statement. Do not criticize the person with the anointing of God on their life. It will lead you to barren unbelief. Yes, you read that right. That's pretty unbelievable. In my opinion, it's often because leaders have drifted spiritually away from the pure faith. Instead of hours spent praying, fasting, and repenting, they're too busy for God. And like Samson, they know not that spirit has departed. All right. So he does not like that comment. Now, I do believe sometimes that's Christians always have built-in protection, right? Christians always have built-in protection. Hey, don't criticize the one who's anointed by God. Don't criticize this movement. How dare you criticize that church? It's anointed by God. That's the arguments have been used by everything. The Brownsville revival back when that was in the 90s, Vineyard movement, the Lakeland revival, all these big supposedly outpourings. How dare you criticize the anointing of God? It's going to come back on you. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You can't criticize anything that's anointed by you. So everything that you believe is anointed by God, nobody can criticize? That's just maddening. That's so maddening. But Christians always have the built-in response. You start arguing with a Christian about something. Oh, well, you're going to go to hell. Oh, well, that's your great response. Because I disagree with you. Well, you're going to go to hell. You're going to go to hell. I just saw this in an article. DeSantis, I guess the Satanic Temple, I guess in Florida, they're going to have where they can have these school chaplains. Well, the Satanic Temple was like, well, okay, well, if you're going to have Christians who are now like school chaplains in the public schools, well, then the Satanic Temple, they want to have people in the public schools. Well, then DeSantis is like, absolutely not. It's not going to happen. So now the Satanic Temple is going to file a lawsuit because it's like, well, no, you can't use the public schools and say you can have Christian pastors there as chaplains, but you can't have people of other religion. Now that's, you can't do that. All right. That's not the way this is supposed to work. Well, many of the Christians underneath the comments on the article were like, if anyone criticized DeSantis and criticized this and said, wait a minute, what about the freedom of religion? No, you can't do this. Immediately, guess what you were told? You're not a Christian. You're going to hell. Okay, well, okay. With what such great logic? That's Christians. Christians always go to these kinds of arguments, all right? So he says what happens. Now, the author here then says, hey, what happens is that pastors become basically spiritually so blind because they're so busy for God and they're not actually, you know, focusing on God. And that definitely can happen. Now, he goes on to say, I'm also praying for Alex Magala, the stuntman who performed at the men's conference. It's not his fault. I hope he doesn't get discouraged in his faith journey by the fallout, but learns from it. So what can we learn from the aftermath? The big lesson. Now, this is the big lesson that this author finds. The big lesson this author finds of this article. You can find it at thechristianpost.com, is this. Pride must die. Pride must die. Now, is pride the main lesson we take away from this? So I was sitting here kind of contemplating, just as I was contemplating, okay, wait, there's the Christ-centered life, the self-centered life. Just as I was contemplating, bread of deceit is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth shall be filled with gravel. Just as I was contemplating this entire situation with Driscoll and John Lindell and trying to figure out the main lesson, I was then beginning to kind of contemplate and think about, so the big lesson is pride. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe, Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. Okay. Whatever. And so I just kind of just thinking, and I'm like, you know what? I've been keeping up, obviously, with the Charles Stanley Institute. Let me go to In Touch Ministries, intouch.com. I think it's intouch.com. It may be intouch.org. Intouch.org. Let me go to intouch.org. And let's just kind of look around and see what's going on the website. Not the Institute website, but just the In Touch website. I was looking around, saw the devotional for today. I think it was Matthew 13. I'm like, okay. And then I found an article. Stay with me. I found an article. If I can get to it. I found an article entitled, How to Mind Your Business. An in-touch guide to better spiritual health. Now, maybe it's because I read this just after reading another article about Driscoll, John Lindell, James River Church, Stronger Men's Conference, and all of the craziness. Maybe it's just because I just read an article that said, hey, the big lesson is pride must die. But I read this, How to Mind Your Business. I think I may say it, How to Mind Your Own Business. I think that may be how I would even word it. But as soon as I read that, I was like, I wonder if this is a big lesson, maybe not the big lesson, but maybe a big lesson that we take away from all of that. Maybe it's so common for us in 2024 that we make everything our business. Have you ever noticed that? Everything is our business. Everything. Because almost everything posted on the internet allows you to then comment, right? Comment sections, social media. We live in 2024. Anyone can own a microphone and can go live on the internet for, you know, and pretty easily. Even if they don't have a microphone, they can go live on their phone. They can record a video of themselves. You got Facebook Live. You got, is it X or Twitter Spaces? I don't know all the different, there's so many platforms. You can go live and you can share your opinion about anything. So anything and everything is our business because anyone and everyone can voice their opinion about it. So I was wondering, I wonder if the big lesson about Driscoll, John Lindell, James River Church, Stronger Man's Conference is maybe including me, including myself, maybe we should just mind our own business. Now, so that's how my brain was working. So then I grabbed my iPad and I looked and I was like, I'm going to read this article. So this is what I read. How to Mind Your Business, an in-touch guide to better spiritual health. They start this way. We've all been there. You're online looking at pictures of your cousin's wedding or messaging with a friend from college. You scroll down your feed and see a meme that strikes you as funny. You like it and hit share. Within seconds, your neighbor's niece's boyfriend has commented. He doesn't think it's funny. And how dare you not care about the poor and suffering in the world? At first, you're taken aback. But then something rises inside of you. So you reply with facts and data and maybe even a Bible verse. 3 hours and 37 comments later, you log out, bleary-eyed and agitated. Oh, I think we can all say, oh me to this. At least I can. Now, I remember the early days of Facebook, There was a pastor that I knew on Facebook, and his timeline, his everything, almost every day, his timeline was a war zone. He would throw something out and it would just be like, boom, 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 boom. And I remember getting so involved in these fights and these debates. And there was a part of me felt like I can ultimately win the debate. I mean, I was on the debate team in high school. I went to, you know, state championship. I can do, and you just argue, and facts. And you point out their logical fallacies. You point out their error in thinking. You destroy the information they give you as being fraudulent. And you're going to win. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on. And at some point you begin to go, what is happening to me? So I remember how bad that used to be. Even today, there's still certain things. Like I'll be reading a news article on yahoo.com. Well, they have comments underneath it. And inevitably, I'll start reading the comments and I'll be like, why? Why? Look, what are they saying? It could be anywhere. It could be on a music streaming service that has an online community that you can be. Sometimes you want to try to, you're trying to maybe say, hey, why are you attacking this? Why? What are you doing? But you can just get caught up in it because everything becomes your business. This is what they go on to say. Despite all the positive ways that modern technology connects people, it also links us in more complicated ways. When personal lives and opinions become public, people who barely know us aren't afraid to tell us what they think. And honestly, we are tempted to do the very same thing. It can be really hard to just keep scrolling, especially when someone is so obviously wrong. Yet, as Christians, we're called to something different. Now, when I say we're called to something different, those are my words, not the words in the original article. I changed the words in the original article. But it's going to describe that we're supposed to do something different. So now I'm sitting here processing all of this, and I'm like, So if you think about the situation, yes, it was public, what happened at James River Church. But I don't attend their church. Yes, what happened was public with Mark Driscoll giving that rebuke. I don't attend Mark Driscoll's church. Everything that happened. Now, on one hand, it's public. But on the other hand, it became public, not necessarily by the design of James River Church, because the original information that came out was put there by people recording it on their cell phones, and then they published it on the internet. Then news articles were written about the situation. Now, once news articles are written about the situation, then it becomes everyone's business. But even before that, everyone was already starting to formulate opinions because of the cell phone video. So I'm like, okay, what's the appropriate thing? Well, the verse that they point to is 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. I know we're taking a long and winding road to get here, but that's what I like to do. So maybe you either will appreciate it or it will just drove you crazy how long I took you to get here, but that's okay. Okay. I just wanted to share all the wild and crazy mind that I have and how it goes in 15 million different directions. But the passage they quote is 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 11. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 11, where we read this. And that ye study to be quiet and to do your own business and to work with your own hands as we commanded you. 1 Thessalonians 4, 11. Let me read it from a different translation. 1 Thessalonians 4, 11. Another translation reads it this way. You ready? Here we go. 1 Thessalonians 4, 11. To seek to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business. We should seek to lead a quiet life where we're minding our own business. To lead a quiet life, minding our own business. This is... I don't know exactly where the line is here. I mean, obviously, I'm a podcaster for crying out loud, right? One of the things I do is comment about what's going on in the world. One of the things I try to do is offer a biblical and theological perspective about what's going on. Hopefully, that's somewhat nuanced and layered and see it from so many different perspectives and ask questions, trying to keep people from jumping to wild conclusions and trying to see the different layers and the nuance of a situation. Just like I tried to do with the whole James River Church and Mark Driscoll situation. I tried to break it down into individual parts, right? I tried my best to do so. But at what point, when you're commenting, when you're talking about what people are doing and you're sharing opinions or thoughts, at what point are you violating this concept here? Now we could ask, is this Paul just telling this to be true of the church at Thessalonica, or is this a challenge for all of us? Well, I think it's definitely something we should take to heart. At what point are you no longer living a quiet life and you're not minding your own business? They state it this way in this article. As Christians, we're called to be people of peace who are wise representatives of God's kingdom. Or as Paul puts it in 1 Thessalonians 4:11, Christians should try to lead a quiet life and attend to their own business as a way to honor the gospel. So how can we thread this needle? Here's a guide we've put together to help you navigate the gray areas of online interactions and to equip you for those times when a nuanced approach is necessary and clear answers don't present themselves. We hope these suggestions will help you to work through the tensions and speak peace in a world, both cyber and real, that's in dire need of healing. All right. So then they go here and say a lot of things. All right. Like here's some questions they say to ask yourself, right? Why does this feel so essential right now? Why is it capturing my attention? Like, why are you focusing on this particular thing? Is it something outside of me? Is it something outside of me pushing me to engage? Is there something outside of me pushing me to engage this situation? What good things will I miss if I focus on this? So what could happen if I'm focusing on this? Now, they go through and they add a lot of concepts here. And I mean, it's a long article. They've got a lot of suggestions and ideas, and maybe we could work through it some later time. But the point is, they're trying to, like, there's some things you should think about. Now, I don't know how it works. Like, for Christian ministries, so many Christian ministries are, I mean, if you look at Christian podcasts, they're almost addressing always things that are going on. A book, a pastor, a sermon, a theology. It's always, we're always addressing something that tends to happen. Now, sometimes you can put aside all of that and do just more focus on teaching. All right. Now, when we do sermon reviews, we don't do our sermon reviews in a way like, hey, I'm going to find a bad one so I can criticize it. I'm just listening to a sermon. So we're just doing it in real time. So I think that's not us not minding our own business. That's just us listening to a sermon and then utilizing that sermon for hopefully important discussions about theology, biblical interpretation, hermeneutics. And I think we do a pretty fair job with that. Now, sometimes it can become very critical, but I always try not to make it critical so much about the person, but maybe critical about the concept or the ideas. But at what point for you individually, and for me individually, when are we not minding our own business? Like, I know everything online is your business in a sense because it's online. It's saying, hey, look at this, give us a comment. So everything calls for your attention. But when is it wrong? When have we engaged in something that is just not biblical? Now, how we engage in it, yes, we can. That's a little bit more objective, right? How do you engage in it? Well, are you spreading false information? Are you bearing false witness? Are you spreading lies? Are you judging that which you cannot judge? You're judging motives. You're judging the heart. Okay, well, those are things we cannot do. Are we conducting ourselves in a godly way? Are we showing anger and hatred? And okay, well that's very objective in judging how we are doing it. It's a little bit more subjective to say, wait a minute, are we not minding our own business? So I was thinking the big lesson maybe about Mark Driscoll and all of that situation, was it really anybody's business? Well, on one hand, I think some of it is, because it's another example of the out of control Christian and, you know, Christian conference industrial complex that I have so many issues with, where people are paying over $100 to get into a conference to hear people supposedly preach the word of God. I have an issue with that. Now, on one hand, they advertise it. James River Church already has the advertisement up for next year's conference. They advertise it. They publish it. They promote it. Well, when if you publish and promote it, you're making it my business. I've had churches here in the local area a long time ago get mad at me for calling them out. I'm like, you're the one who sent me the thing in the mail inviting me to your church. You're the one who posted the ad in the newspaper. You're the one. Oh, come on. You promote it all over the place. If I want to criticize it, you made it everyone's business. It's not like I went looking secretly at some top secret information. You published it everywhere. You publish it everywhere. It's open for criticism. So where's that fine line? I used to struggle with this myself way back on Facebook, way back years. I mean, I don't even know. It's what, 10, 15 years now? I don't even know, maybe 20 years. I don't even know how long it's been now. It's been a long time. I know I used to struggle with, okay, wait a minute. So anyone can post what they want. Who am I to criticize it or to mock it or to make fun of it or to think it's stupid? Who am I? It's their timeline. It's their feed. It's not mine. Like, who am I to get involved with? But at the same time, it's like, you see that underneath it where it says comment or reply? I don't even know what's there anymore. Whatever it says, well, they are on a site that literally is asking people to make comment about it. So can I not give my opinion? But then who am I to give my opinion? Why am I giving my opinion? Why? I saw somewhere they were posting about Taylor Swift and how many, like she broke like every known record you can break for how many downloads and streams for her new album. And someone posted something like, who cares about boring music? And I think I replied like, you obviously care because you're here commenting. You obviously care. But then why do I care that they say they don't care, but they obviously do? Who care? Like, well, so then like, I take the bait. Or there are a lot of the news articles about Taylor Swift is filled with old people like, I wish that when music was like it used to be in the olden days. The music today, her music is just horrible. They don't make any good music anymore. 50 years ago, all the male, just stop, talk. And then I just want to start just yelling, going, come on. That old mentality, old people drive me crazy when they do. There's no good music except the music. They don't even understand the psychological reason why they're saying that. Like, it's just ridiculous to say that. Oh, drives me crazy when people do that. But then why should I care? Is it my business? Well, they're posting it online. So then it is my business. Where is that line? See, I think there was a time when Paul was telling the people in Thessalonica, mind your own business. I think it was a little bit easier to process, right? In other words, don't go looking, trying to get involved. Hey, did you hear about so-and-so? I don't need to hear about that. It's none of my business. And hey, I'm not going to go look. I'm not going to try to find out. I'm not going to try to look into what's going on. It's none of my business, right? I'm going to leave it alone. You know, I'm not going to call to find out. I'm not going to email to ask, right? I mean, I know they couldn't call or email. But the point is, there was a time I think people had to look for things. Now, everything is everyone's business because everything is like, look at me. Give me your attention. When have we crossed the line? Now, I'm not saying that this is the main lesson for what happened at James River Church, but I wonder, is it really any of our business? James River Church wants to have a man swallowing a sword. We don't have to go. We don't have to have the same thing in our church. If Mark Driscoll wants to rebuke it, he can rebuke it. If James River Church doesn't want him to rebuke it, they can stop him. It's all of their issue. Is it anybody else's issue? Now, they've made it public. I mean, John Liddell basically told everyone that if you listen to Mark Driscoll, I think it's pretty much fair to say you should not be supporting or listening to him anymore. I mean, he went so far. I mean, and they released the video online. So once again, they're trying to make it everyone's business. So at what point, I don't know if I have it figured out. I know it's something we need to stop and ask ourselves. Am I minding my own business? Am I living a quiet life? What does that look like? I'm going to go back to that passage again. I want you to write that passage down. Because this is one of those things that's very subjective. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 11. To seek to lead a quiet life. To mind your own business. What does a quiet life look like? And what does it look like to be minding your own business? What are the actions that say you're not living a quiet life? And what are the actions that show that you're not minding your own business? Now, I can't answer that for you, and I can't even answer it for me. I'm still struggling with should I even have ever addressed the issue? Should all these articles and YouTube videos? Now, I could argue, wait a minute. If I'm reading these articles and responding to these articles, I'm minding my own business, but they're bringing it to my attention. So it was the original people who went and got the information and posted it. They weren't minding their business, but then I take that information and then I address it. Well, then I'm just as culpable for it as well, right? I mean, if I try to live a quiet life and mind my own business, do I no longer ever broadcast again? Now, I can broadcast and not talk about anything going on in the world and talk about what's going. I don't know if that. See, I think it's always hard to figure out exactly where that line is. Some things in the Bible, I know nobody wants to admit this. Sometimes it's kind of very subjective and unclear in some cases. Right? For example, if you remove the internet, you remove all of that. Hey, did you hear what's going on at the church across the street or, you know, in Abilene or wherever? No, what's going on? Well, I hear this is going on. Oh, really? So, okay. Well, do you know so-and-so? Okay. Well, I'm going to call so-and-so. Well, I'm going to call so-and-so. I'm going to look and see what's going on. And then you start trying to gather the information and then you talk about it. Then you get behind the microphone. Okay. Now you're getting into a clear example where you're not minding your own business. You went snooping around. You were a busybody, right? In 2024, you don't have to do that. You just hop online and it's like, hey, here's all of our problems. Hey, here's our video. Here, like, it's all right. It's just put there in front of you. There are articles. There's news. There's videos. There's audio. It's right there. So then, am I minding my own business to see that stuff that's being sent and posted everywhere? Then you have to ask, well, maybe who's posting it? See, then it gets into, it gets a little subjective. But tonight, I just want you to write down those two concepts. Live a quiet life and mind your own business. What if you were to write out, like if someone just called you right now going, hey, I'm reading my Bible and I'm in 1 Thessalonians, Paul tells them about living a quiet life and to mind their own business. Can you help me understand what that looks like? Can you tell me what that looks like? Because I want to do this. I want to live a quiet life and mind my own business. Well, there's a part of me that says, okay, well, get rid of your internet connection and go live in a monastery. It'll be quiet. And there's not going to be a lot of business you can find out about other than the monks or the nuns that you're currently with. There's not going to be much you can, I guess you could have your own, you know, monastery gossip, but I think it should be relatively easy. It'll be much easier to live a quiet life and to mind your own business in that situation. But we definitely like to find out. And then once we find out, we like to spread it. Now, maybe the main lesson is about pride has to die. Maybe. Maybe the main lesson for a lot of us in 2024 is at least to try to figure out how this applies. I would love to get your thoughts. You can email me news if@yahoo.com. That's news if@yahoo.com. That's news if@yahoo.com. Thank you for coming on this little mini journey with me about everything that's been going on in this studio for the last hour. You've heard everything that my mind has focused on this and then this and then this and then this and this. And hopefully something in all of that will prove to be beneficial for you. Thanks for listening. Everyone have a wonderful Saturday night, and hopefully you have a great Sunday. God bless.